Welcome to the Underwater Podcast, where we take a deep dive into the world of underwater portrait photography, cinematography, and everything in between. With me, your host, Brett Stanley. Welcome back to the Underwater Podcast, and this week we're traipsing the light fantastic with underwater performer Claire Friesian. Claire grew up fascinated with water and solidified her love of it with synchronized swimming in her teens. She moved from Canada to Las Vegas to start her dream job of working on the water-based Cirque du Soleil show La Rev, a mind-bending extravaganza of aerial and underwater performance. We chat about her work in TV and commercials and how freediving helps her keep in tune with her surroundings. Okay, let's dive in. Claire, welcome to the Underwater Podcast.
Hi, Brad. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Where are you at the moment? You're in Canada, right?
I am. I've been based in New York City for the last few years, but because of COVID, I recently moved to Vancouver so I could keep working. So I'm feeling very lucky to be back in Canada, grateful to be able to spend more time with my family. And I'm also really looking forward to meeting people in the freediving underwater community here, because it seems pretty robust.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I've kind of spoken to a few people up there, and I think if you don't mind the cold,
right,
it's pretty good.
Yes, I haven't had a lot of time in the water in these temperatures, but it's definitely a new challenge.
Have you done a lot of open water stuff?
I've done a few projects in the ocean, yes, and those are my favorite, because you really get to feel the experience of being underwater and in these like amazing magical places. It's like you're privy to this secret world. So I love those shoots for sure. And where are you? You're in California?
Yeah. I'm in Los Angeles. So It's a little warmer down here, but yeah, the water here is probably high 60s on a good day.
Okay.
I can't remember what that is in Celsius, but like 15 degrees.
That's still cold.
Yeah. It's definitely, it wakes you up. You feel alive.
Exactly.
What sort of open water projects have you done? I did see you did a commercial. Is it for a beer brand?
Yes. That was, I think the one you're referring to, it was for Estrella Dam. And that one we filmed off the coast of Cyprus. It was an incredible experience. The team was amazing. The whole project was to raise awareness about like the effects of single-use plastic on the Mediterranean Ocean. And it just received the most overwhelming response. So it was a pretty special project. Like an amazing underwater team. Jacques led it with his team. Amy Gardner choreographed, and everything was shot in camera. There was no special effects done in post. So all of the plastic that you see, this amazing FX team somehow managed to position it in the ocean while it was moving.
Oh, wow. That's great. Because that short film, which it kind of is, you know, this commercial is, you know, it's got you kind of dancing and performing under the water. And you're in, it's fairly deep too. It probably looks like it's at least 20 feet down.
Yeah, I think the deepest part we shot in was about 12 meters.
Oh, right.
So it was, it was amazing. It was pretty cool.
So what sort of support did you have on that? What was the process of filming that?
Yeah, so we had an underwater safety team. I did the whole shoot. I was just free diving. There was no scuba, but it was there, in case we needed it. And then we had the FX team, and then we had a whole crew on land, obviously watching through video. And the director even would sometimes come down on scuba and watch from underwater, which was pretty cool. He was like, it's a very different show under here.
I can imagine. Yeah. so you weren't staged out off the coast. You were actually on the shore. It was just a deeper part of the shore.
I don't know, maybe like 100 meters off the coast. So we were very close, but we were set up on boats and whatnot.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And did you say that you weren't using the scuba, so you're just doing it all on free dive, just breath hold?
Yes.
Wow. So what sort of breath hold have you got? It must be fairly decent.
I'm not exactly sure. The last time I checked, it was about 4 minutes. But right. I mean, it changes when you're, especially for this project, you're dancing. So you're exerting a lot more energy than you would when you're just free diving in a totally relaxed state.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're, and especially with the water temperatures and whatnot, it all changes. But I think about 4 minutes.
That's pretty good. I mean, mm-hmm. to give you at least a couple of minutes worth of footage to
like,
per take.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're having to go that far down by the time you're set and camera's ready, everything, you know, you need some time.
Yeah. So how were you getting down? Were you just getting down under your own steam, or were they such, did you have weights or anything?
I did have a support diver who helped me down. And I also had a kind of a rope to help me guide me down to the right position. And so the first part was weighted. I would, you know, kind of hold on to a weight and drop maybe 3 or 4 meters and then swim down the rest as I was equalizing.
What was the decision to not put you on a regulator?
I think it was pretty just natural. We all felt comfortable with it. And there's something really freeing when you don't have those breathing apparatuses on. You really feel connected to the water. I think that's my favorite part is really, you know, I feel at home, and you get to that place where your body has just completely given over. And there's like a, you know, this peaceful calmness. You just feel like you can stay there forever, especially when you're in the ocean. There's just something really magical about that.
I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, I love scuba diving, but I love free diving kind of more because it's so much more quiet, you know, like
yes.
you don't have the bubbles, you don't have the regulator noise. Mm-hmm. You do seem more at one with the environment. Whereas
Absolutely.
The scuba for me kind of feels like you're a little removed because you're in your own little, I guess right. you're in your little bubble, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. I completely agree with you. I mean, it feels like time stops. And for me, it especially when I'm free diving or when I'm, you know, dancing purely for myself, it really feels like a deep meditative state that you're in. You completely get out of your head. And like you said, everything is quiet. It's silent, except for, you know, the sound of your own heartbeat, which is really powerful.
Yeah. Do you find that with free diving, having that you know, set time limit of the mm-hmm. breath hold makes you appreciate it more because you know you've only got a certain number of minutes down here?
That's a good question. I guess yes and no. I don't think I think about the time so much when I'm underwater. I'm often surprised about how long it's been. So I don't think I really think about it. But, I mean, it does make you really appreciate, you know, this, you have such a short time to experience this world and you really want to soak it in and just be in awe of the beauty that's there.
Yeah. I think that's what I kind of mean is that it's not so much you're looking at the watch, but you kind of, you know, you know you've got a limited time. Mm. So you kind of make the most of it, you know, whereas
yes.
with scuba diving, you kind of, it's a lot more relaxed. It's a lot more, you know, you've got at least half an hour, 45 minutes.
Yes, yes,
so you kind
absolutely.
Of, I don't know, like the experience is kind of a little bit watered down, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. because it's not, you know, you've got these, you know, if you've got a breath hold of 2 minutes, it's everything is pushed into those 2 minutes.
Yes, no, absolutely, absolutely. You want to get down there quick and be there.
I really think, and I've said this before on the show, like for me, free diving kind of feels like a superpower. Like it feels
yes.
like this amazing gift that we've been given to be able to do this. And I think when you can get to that point where your breath hold is, it doesn't have to be long, but it's so surprising to you that you're like, I'm still down here. I still feel
yeah.
comfortable. What
yes.
is this all about? You know?
No, absolutely. I mean, I'm in awe of these free divers that can stay underwater for, you know, 10, 12 minutes. It's insane to me. I'm blown away, but it must be such a magical feeling to be able to spend that much time at once underwater.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I wonder what that feels like that long,
yeah.
you know, because for me, I think my breath hold is about 2 minutes, mm-hmm. like on a good day. And it always feels longer than 2 minutes. You know,
right.
it always, like time slows down while I'm down there. And imagine being, you know, 8, 9 minutes worth, how long that must feel to you. And
yes.
how much experience you can have.
How deep they can go too. I mean, it's like this unexplored territory down there.
Yeah. Does the depth interest you? Going deeper?
It does. It does. I mean, I think as humans, we have a fascination with the unknown,
yeah.
much like outer space underwater is this unexplored world. And so any time we're able to spend down there is really special.
Do you think you'd ever go to space?
I would love, yes. If there was an opportunity to go to space, hands down, I would go.
That's amazing. Yeah. There's some people that I speak to who are like, absolutely, I would totally go. And there's other people who are like, God, no, why would I do that? You know, but I'm like, you know, but you almost go to space every time you go diving. And they're like, yeah, it's totally different. It's such an interesting mindset change.
Well, there's so much underwater to explore that, you know, it's in our own backyard. It's amazing to me how much we don't know about it yet. You know, there's so much focus on outer space, but we could learn so much, I think, about our planet from underwater.
And it is almost less accessible than space. Mm-hmm. Underwater is kind of, you know, it is more challenging than going to space because mm-hmm. of the pressure, because of the difficulties with it all. You know, it is kind of the final frontier.
Yes. Yes. Well, I hope we can make more progress in that during our lifetime and you know, understand more about what happens down there. My twin sister is actually a marine biologist. So I learn things from her and am, you know, just in awe of this world.
That's amazing. So is she your identical twin?
We are fraternal. We look more like sisters. But yeah, she does incredible work. She has the craziest stories about, you know, being in trash cans with octopus trying to like free them into the ocean, or she's done projects working in Antarctica and all over the world. So yeah, it's pretty amazing.
So how did you get into underwater? Was it something that you and both of you kind of loved as a kid, or was it something you got into?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we actually grew up in the Middle East in Doha, Qatar, which is a tiny little peninsula that juts into the Persian Gulf. And my family moved there when my twin and I were 1 year old. And that's really where my love for the world, our love, I should say, definitely began. You know, it's so hot and dry. We spent as much time as we could in the pool and in the ocean. And I remember watching the Olympics on TV when I was six and seeing synchronized swimming for the first time and immediately telling my mom that I wanted to do this. And I made her take us to the pool. It was after midnight. We were in the middle of the night swimming around in the dark, trying terribly to do these moves that we'd seen. And so when we moved back to Canada a year later, we were hooked already, and that was it. So
amazing. So you'd seen these synchronized swimmers on screen, mm-hmm. and then you just wanted to be them? You wanted to do that?
Yeah, I was so intrigued. I mean, I love the water and I love to dance. I was taking ballet and I was like, this is everything. This is all that I've, you know, imagined. And so, I mean, that midnight swim led to over a decade of competition. So I really found a calling in that sport.
Yeah. And so how did you get into that? Was synchronized swimming something that was big in Doha?
It wasn't at all. So I, you know, it kind of stayed in the back of my mind for a year, and then we moved back to Canada. And so once we were back, we did a synchronized swimming summer camp and we're like, yes, this is what I want to do.
Yeah. So what was that like getting into that? Had you done any competitive swimming or anything beforehand, or was this your first real kind of competitive underwater?
This was my first competitive, I guess, aquatic venture. I loved the water and was always swimming, but I'd never competed in, you know, speed swimming or any, you know, other sport. But, you know, I competed for 10 years in synchronized swimming, and, you know, this culminated in competing on Canada's national team, which was an incredible honor to represent my country and, you know, do what I love. So I'm very honored to have been able to do that.
And so where did you go from there? So once you'd done the synchronized swimming, what did that lead you into?
Yeah. So after a few years competing on the national team, I had the opportunity to join the cast of Le Rêve. And Le Rêve is this incredible aquatic Cirque du Soleil show in Las Vegas created by Franco Dragon. And unfortunately, the show just permanently closed after running for 15 years with COVID.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't know if you ever had a chance to see it, but it was the most gorgeous show and holds a very special place in my heart. I mean, I can't even begin to explain the impact that this show had on me.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. I did see O.
Yes, yes.
And it blew my mind. Like,
it's the same director. So yeah. It's very similar. Yes.
So talk us through Le Rêve. What does that entail? I know it's a show, Cirque du Soleil show based on water, but mm-hmm. give us more details on that.
Let's see, where to begin? I mean, it's this incredible theater in the round. It's an aquatic show. There's a 1 million gallon tank that we perform in. There's about 90 cast members from 17, 18 different countries with, you know, various skill sets and languages and backgrounds all coming together to create this transformative experience. You know, there's synchronized swimmers like myself, there's aerialists, there's acrobats, there's clowns, there's, you know, there's everything. It's incredible. And I joined the show. I was the youngest cast member and this was my first show. So I had absolutely no idea what I was doing, but these artists really welcomed me like family. And I can't thank them enough. It was incredible. We performed 10 shows a week, 2 shows a night, 5 nights a week. And each night we would perform a different track. So the lineup would be posted an hour before the first show. And then we would find out, you know, what we were doing that night, which really helped keep it fresh. When you're doing thousands of the same show, it, you know, it can feel repetitive. So this is one way to really keep it exciting. There was an act called Tango that was one of the main synchronized swimming acts. And we performed in these now iconic red stilettos, which had to be repainted every night after the shows. I learned aerials and performed 50 feet up in the air without safety harnesses, only, you know, being held by a blindfolded partner. It was crazy. It really pushed me out of my comfort zone there.
I can imagine. But I mean, if it's anything like the O production, you know, it is like, it's a spectacle. Like it is, it's almost like you're tripping. Like it's kind of hallucinogenic.
It is. It's almost overstimulating. There's things going on all around you, you know, underwater, on land, in the air. The show had fountains and fire and live birds. You know, there was everything that you could imagine. So you're right. It really is a spectacle.
And was it the same where the stage could actually rise up and become a dry stage and then disappear back down again?
Yeah, there were a few different stages. And so they could all move independently. Some could, you know, go underwater. The tank was about, I believe, 27 feet deep. So it could go down to the bottom. It can go up maybe, I don't know, 15 feet into the air. There was all different platforms, like everything could move and rotate. Yeah, it was a lot going on.
So impressive.
Mm-hmm. There's these underwater tunnels that we would make entrances through. So they were about 10 meters long that we would swim under. And they had hookahs in them, like regulators. So if you needed to breathe, you could. But it was a pretty cool experience.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, actually, is what was happening under the water? Because I think I've seen some behind the scenes stuff, and it's, you know, and they have a whole team of divers down there for the thing. And what surprised me, especially with O, was how many people would come out of the water at one time.
Yes.
Like how many performers there were down there. And you're kind of like, hang on, there's got to be at least a diver for every one of these people.
Yes. Well, our show had 16 safety divers underwater.
Right.
And they, you know, had the ability to communicate to each other and to stage management above water. And they had, you know, cameras. So everything was very safe. And I believe there were 70 hookah regulators stationed underwater on stage. So you could breathe. Our main tango act was on scuba. So we had these long lines that would connect to kind of, you know, under where the audience was. And so because that act is about 4 minutes. So we were performing on scuba.
So what was that act? Describe that act for me. Cause I can't, are you actually underwater doing the tango?
Yes. So our legs are up the whole time. So it's a straight, in synchronized swimming terms, it would be called a figure. So we're going just with legs for about 4 minutes. And at the very end, we, you know, detach from our scuba and come up of the water as if, you know, we'd been holding our breath, but we definitely are on scuba, and we wear these red heels, which were definitely a thing to get used to from competing. You're not used to having heels that can, you know, stab you in the middle of an act. So it was definitely an adjustment. And being in the round, you know, you have lights everywhere. So it was a bit disorienting at first trying to figure out where you're facing. But we did a clock system. So you would start to recognize, you know, which hand you had to face.
Right. So the lights would tell you which direction you were facing.
Well, the lights were all the same, but we had kind of three VOMs, so we'd split it into thirds, and those were marked for directions. So you could kind of situate yourself against those. But it was definitely a challenge at first to figure that out.
Yeah, it sounds really difficult. And I assume because you were saying you had to repaint the shoes every time, were you kicking the shoes together all of the time?
Not intentionally, but just with some of the moves, you would rub them, and just with the water, the chemicals in the water, I think they just deteriorated quickly.
Right. Was it highly chlorinated?
It was pretty high. We had lots of other things. You know, we would run big. We had this tree that rotated out of the water for the opening act, this enormous tree that was run on, I believe, vegetable oil. And also all different, there was a lot of different substances underwater. So yes, it was pretty chlorinated, but it was nice and warm. It was 89 degrees, which is quite warm.
Yeah, especially if you're moving, like you're probably quite hot already.
Yes, but it was lovely because you'd be in and out of the water all the time, or you'd be doing an aerial act and then jump in the water, and you'd, you know, be in wet costumes. And so while it was quite hot for our main acts, overall it was very helpful for the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And what were you doing? I mean, if you're in that water, you know, twice a day, 5 days a week, what are you doing to kind of look after your skin?
You know, we went through so much Cetaphil. We had tubs of it backstage.
What's that? What's Cetaphil?
It's a lotion that our show happened to have, and we would go through tubs and tubs of it. It was, and being in Vegas too, it's quite dry.
Yeah. Because I've done underwater shoots and stuff in Vegas, and yeah, the worst thing is getting out and then basically almost instantly drying off because of the dry air out there.
Yeah, it's a pro and con.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and I also in the show played a lizard character, and so that had its own challenges for being underwater because I had these enormous webbed feet and hands that were kind of the size of a flipper. Except that they didn't have a flipper inside. It was just silicone. So they were these floppy things that you had to move around in the water in. So, and then you had, you know, a 6 foot long tail and a prosthetic head with a horn. So it was quite challenging, but also really fun, you know, because you had the freedom to improvise and interact with the audience in those kinds of roles.
And when you're in a like costume like that, are you floating in the water, or is there a platform underneath you to help you kind of do your performance?
You're swimming. There's nothing supporting you. Well, for parts of the act there are as the lifts move, but for the main part you're just swimming.
Oh, that's amazing. And and difficult, I would assume.
Yes, but so fun. So fun.
Yeah. And the crowd, because I remember being there and just, you know, they think the people, because it is, I think lift is probably a little more intimate than O was because it's in the round. Mm-hmm. But everyone who's kind of in the front of the audience, it kind of gets interacted with a little bit, right?
Yeah, right. The first row, we call it the splash zone because you can get wet, is only about 4 feet away from the performers. So it's very intimate. And we have, you know, performers coming in from behind the audience, coming down. So there is a lot of audience interaction for sure with this show.
Yeah, that's amazing. So why did you leave that show? Did you leave because it shut down?
No. So I left actually about 5 years ago. And it was an absolute honor to work with all of those incredible artists. And it really, you know, that show really made me who I am today. It made me realize that life as an artist was possible. So I'm so grateful for it, but I did feel limited by expressing myself solely through movement. And so I craved, you know, a broader skill set for storytelling. Yeah. So because of that, I decided to pursue acting and moved to New York.
Oh, great. And had you done much acting before?
I hadn't, other than in the show, you know, playing various characters, which kind of, you know, gave me that first taste of, oh, this is what I love, you know?
Yeah, the performance side of it.
Exactly, yes. And trying to embody these various characters and creating stories for them and, you know, really trying to connect with the audience. So I hadn't done any, you know, other theater prior to that.
Yeah. So what was your transition into acting? Did you end up going and doing some workshops or some training, or did you just jump straight in?
Yeah. So I moved to New York and trained at a conservatory for a couple of years. And since then have been doing a lot of theater. And then I've also been able to combine all of these passions in being able to act underwater in, you know, various films and television series and commercials. So it's been a real treat to kind of put these all together in a way that I didn't think was possible.
Yeah. You've had quite a varied kind of career in the acting side of things. Like, you've done some very well-known shows.
I've been lucky to work on, with the Aquiles, I've worked on The Marvelous Miss Maisel and Jane the Virgin and Claws, and then done, you know, a ton of commercial projects like the one we talked about earlier with Estrella Damm. Yeah. So I've been very lucky. And then in terms of, you know, acting underwater, they're often kind of these otherworldly characters, especially for film. So pre-COVID, I shot a film off the coast of Japan called USO. It should be coming out soon. It's been delayed a bit in post.
Right.
But I played this kind of spiritual underwater being who's coming from another world to bring together an American and Japanese soldier during the Vietnam War.
Oh, cool. And is that a lead role? Or?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was so impressed with the other two main actors, Carl Gossman and Am Suguchi, because they played the soldiers and they were absolutely fearless filming underwater. They'd never done it before. And, you know, they're doing fight scenes and we're filming in the ocean at night. It's dark. They went for it. So I felt like a proud mom.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
But I'm excited to see it.
That's amazing. Did you have much to do with their training?
I didn't. And we didn't really train. That's why I was it was a really quick shoot and we just got there and kind of had a day to kind of acclimatize and be in the water.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of, the weather did not cooperate. So we kept having to move locations and kind of change what we were doing. So they were very adaptable to you know, new environments.
Right. So literal deep end.
Yes. Yes.
When you're working with directors and when you're working with on films and these kind of commercials and stuff, are you working with directors who've worked with underwater performers before, or do you find yourself in situations where they're new to it and you kind of have to guide them a little bit in terms of how you can get the performance?
Right. Both. I've worked with some directors who have filmed underwater before, which is wonderful. And then I've worked probably more so with directors that have never experienced, you know, shooting underwater. And it's really cool though, because they're so excited.
Yeah.
It's just like, everything's wow. Like, this is, and after every shoot, they always, you know, say something along the lines of, I want to, you know, do more of this. And I, you know, I want to create a whole film about this. Or it's really cool to see them get excited and see the possibilities. I mean, it is very slow filming underwater compared to on land. So it takes a lot more time.
And budget.
Yes, and budget for sure. And sometimes, unfortunately, these kinds of roles get cut due to budget and timeline, because they, like you said, they're more expensive and take longer.
Yeah. Well, I was speaking recently with Eileen Powell, who was in the show Siren.
And, yes.
And she was saying that, you know, that was her first underwater role. And that it just made her want to do an entire production underwater.
Right.
I think it is addictive.
It really is. I mean, she was incredible in that show. It was wonderful watching her, and also, you know, the show in general, just bringing to light kind of a new take on the mermaid world, you know, kind of a little bit more dark, a little bit more mystery.
Yeah.
But it was beautiful. And I'm so pleased to hear that she had that experience, and you know, it made her want to do more, because it really does hook you. It's a, like you said, a superpower.
Yeah. And I think she's come in it from the opposite way to you. Like, she's come in, you know, kind of now she wants to do more free diving, and now she wants to be in the ocean, you know, more recreationally, and kind of just because she's now got the bug for just being under the water, you know. Whereas I feel like you've kind of come in the other way, where you already had the bug and now you just want to do, you know, take the performance side of things further.
Yes. Yeah. I guess it's completely the opposite, because I found acting through the underwater work and through my work in the water whereas she found the underwater world through her acting. But yeah. It's really cool because I think both of them really inform and help the other.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting, yeah, I've learned a lot from being underwater and from acting that I can translate into the other.
Well, it's interesting too, because that's what Aileen was saying, was that, you know, because these characters are under the water and they're on land. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that because it's, you know, she was playing a character that is a water-based character that then goes to land. She said that after a while, they worked out from being under the water how they would move that character on land. So, but the underwater scenes and all that learning kind of informed their take on their performance on land.
Absolutely. Yeah. How you move underwater and how that translates onto, and then for that show in particular, how it, you know, you're learning to be on land for the first time and how you would move it. You know, it makes you think of these, all these prehistoric animals that have, you know, adapted to living on land from the water, and you understand, you know, why they breathe a certain way or why they walk or they, you know, move. It's fascinating. I mean, I would love to play a character like that at some point and really dive more into that.
Oh yeah. That evolution side of things, you know, like mm-hmm. that. And I'm sure your sister knows a lot about that sort of stuff, of how
yes.
things have moved from one place to another and kept certain traits. And that's, I think that's a thing with free diving as well. You know, with us, there's that mammalian response. You know, once we go under the water, you know, there are techniques and triggers inside us to make us survive that environment. We just don't use them very often.
Right, right. You really adapt to the underwater world with your breath, with your eyes. I mean, your skin, it's fascinating. And I'm so curious about the people that really have dedicated their lives to freediving and to the underwater world, because I can only imagine how much more their body has adapted.
Yes. That's the thing too. So, I mean, as I speak to more underwater performers, the more I realize how different it is for you guys under the water than it is from us, you know, photographers and directors and whatever, who wear masks. I mean, you mm-hmm. guys go under there with your normal eyeballs and have to try and see everything, you know. Are you finding that your vision gets better when you're down there for a while?
You know, I've heard a lot of people say that, and I don't find that so much, but I'm also not sure, because I've, you know, kind of been my whole life in the water doing synchronized swimming and often without goggles, that I've kind of got more used to maybe swimming without goggles. But there is definitely, you know, after some time, your body just really relaxes into the environment, for sure, for sure.
Do you ever go freediving without goggles or without a mask just for recreation?
I
do. Or do you prefer it with the mask on?
You know, both. You see more with the mask, but you feel more part of that world when you're not wearing one. And I think in terms of if you're able to be fortunate to interact with any animals, it seems like you can connect more with them. And who knows, maybe this isn't true, but it just feels like you're more vulnerable and you're able to really just be there and not have, you know, something in the way of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you're breaking down those barriers.
Yes. That's a great way to put it. Yes. Yeah.
And I think, you know, like we're never going to know if we've connected with an animal, you know, we're never going to be able to hear from them to go, wow, mm-hmm. yeah, we had a really good connection. So it is really how you feel, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think animals are so in tune with other animals' kind of feelings and state of being, I think, that
yes.
if you feel like you're comfortable and having a connection, then they'll probably sense that and think, oh, wow, this person's really calm. This mm-hmm. person's safe. This is totally fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a very intuitive process. And, you know, we are really going into their world. And I think anything that we can do to respect their space, and then if, you know, if we do feel invited to, you know, approach very, you know, calmly and respectfully and, you know, really base it off of them, it's very special. And we're able to go and, you know, not being on scuba, not having the bubbles, not having the tank, it's much quieter. And
absolutely.
I think they feel much safer.
Yeah. Well, there's a thing that I read kind of recently where sperm whales are really hard to study because they don't come in anywhere near people with scuba with bubbles, then, you know, they don't like the noise. They don't like any of that. So even if you're wearing a rebreather, I don't think they really particularly like you being near them. And so I've read that marine biologists are studying them through free diving because they can get closer. They can be more accepted. It's such a fascinating thing. And again, I think it's that Aquaman kind of special, you know, superhero kind of skill.
Right, right. Well, you seem more like an aquatic, you know, animal than when you are free diving.
Yeah.
So I think they are definitely more curious and less afraid.
Well, yeah, because you're not this massive, bubbly, noisy thing.
Yes, they're like, what is that?
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
And for sure. It wasn't until I kind of heard that, and I think I read that a few years ago in a free diving book, and then I went diving and I was like, yeah, that's right, it's noisy. You know, we've got this big stream coming off the top of us, and I always, you know, when you're scuba diving, you're like, oh, let's have a look at this animal, and you're like, this animal's like, can you just go away, because this is horrible.
Yes. I mean, I just watched The Octopus Teacher. I don't know if you've watched that. It kind of flew up, and it's, you know, him free diving every day really made, you know, it feel safe and feel able to come out of, you know, their home and you know, learn about, I think it was both ways. They both learned about each other.
Yeah, it was such a beautiful story and so beautifully shot as well.
Yes, it was, you know, I think we need more stories like that help us see, you know, the other side of this, because there's so much commercial production, but to really form an intimate connection with a creature underwater.
And you do quite a lot in terms of ocean protection and advocacy stuff. I know the Estrella Dam commercial was in that vein as well. What are you doing in that side of things? Are you doing any more productions to kind of raise awareness for that?
Yeah, so I'm actually an ambassador for a wonderful nonprofit called No to Plastic. And it's, as you can probably guess from the title, it's dedicated to reducing single-use plastic. And so it's really focused on changing consumer habits and helping people become more conscientious in how they consume by raising awareness and encouraging people to, you know, to pledge not to use single-use plastic. Because it's insane. It's literally everywhere. I mean, I'm sure you've heard, but like plastic bags have been found inside the Mariana Trench, just like 11,000 meters deep. I mean, it's in the food we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe. There's literally plastic in our bodies.
I heard something the other day that the average, I think maybe it's the average American, consumes a credit card's worth of plastic every week.
Oh, wow. That's a good way to visualize it, because I read something recently that said the average American consumes about 74,000 microplastics a year, but that's hard to kind of visualize. So that credit card image is... I'm gonna steal that and use it.
Yeah, I mean, just check it. I haven't fact checked that it was every week, but it was definitely something that was, you know, that's a lot of plastic. And I think the way that we're mainly consuming it is because the plastics enter the ocean, they break down, become microplastics, and then they end up either in the animals that we're eating, or they're ending up in the waterways and back into our drinking water. It's really quite unbelievable.
Right. And I mean, what scares me the most is how plastic is intentionally added as ingredients to our food. You know, like gum, for example, the base of gum is plastic.
Oh, really? Like chewing gum?
Yes, chewing gum. Yeah, I think it's polyvinyl acetate or something. It's one of the common ingredients as the base of gum. And it's crazy that we're literally adding it to our foods.
That's insane. Yeah. That
it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, totally. And it doesn't need to be used so ubiquitously. Like, I look at so much packaging and it's just not needed.
Right, right. There's so many alternatives and, you know, that people can use. And we're starting to see that. And I really feel it's become more of a focus in European countries. But in places like America, it's just not as prioritized.
Well, I think here we have... Yeah, we have the lobbyists. So we have people who are, you know, pressuring the government to not do too much about it. Mm. And then you have companies, say like Coca-Cola or whatever, who do these campaigns that make them look like they're doing something about it, but they're really, really not.
Right.
You know, it's all just kind of fluff and distraction.
yeah, until it becomes a really serious threat, people aren't really taking it so seriously.
No, exactly. Until it affects them personally, and we're all guilty of it. You know, it's not easy to with everyday life. It's not easy to think about things that don't, you know, affect you directly, but we really need to, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, for our future generations and for the environment, you know, this wonderful place we get to call home, we do need to do a better job of looking after it.
Absolutely, yeah. And just sort of getting back to the freediving stuff, like, what are you doing to train? Are you doing stuff like weekly and daily, or is it more you've gotten yourself to a good kind of level and you've maintained it?
You know, I've never really trained it, which maybe sounds terrible. I think just with my synchronized swimming and everything that I've done, I've naturally kind of built it up, and in a way that I'm used to breath holding while moving intensely. So, but it is something that I want to work on more and start building a practice of, you know, daily training. And I'm hoping here in Vancouver, because there is this wonderful community, that I can work with them to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you've got that level without even trying, imagine what you can do if you kind of really get into it.
Yeah, yeah. It's wonderful. It's been challenging living in New York. There's not really water so accessible. So now that I'm here, I think that I'm hoping to be able to get out more.
I think in New York, you just hold your breath on the subway, right? Just see how long you can go.
Yeah, there's not even really pools there. It's a strange place to be based for this kind of work. But I am excited to be here in Vancouver and be able to do that more.
Because there's productions happening there. There's shows that are actually working. And I'm assuming that it would give you a lot more opportunities at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to do more films and TV series underwater.
Have you done any photography? Have you done any modeling for that sort of thing?
Yes, I have. I've been lucky enough to do underwater modeling for lots of different magazines, for Vogue, for Harper's Bazaar, and it's pretty cool because often those photographers are really specialized in underwater work, and so they really have the eye for it. And, you know, you get to wear these fabulous, like, dresses and shoes and see how they move underwater. So it's pretty cool. And, you know, traveling to different places, and it's been wonderful.
So what inspires you? Who inspires you?
Oh my gosh.
To do these things, to push you?
You know, I think I've been inspired by my parents from a very young age. They are both people that have done extreme sports their whole lives. They're really well-known climbers and ice climbers, and they do outrigger, and they're still, like, you know, my mom's going to Worlds to compete in outrigger, and, you know, they like really push themselves and their bodies. And while I didn't pick up their particular sports, I think much to their dismay, I grew up in Calgary surrounded by world-class mountains, and I chose an indoor sport, you know, but really, you know, pushing myself in that kind of way and seeing what's possible, I think really comes from them. And then, you know, just in everyday life, there's so many things that I find inspiration from, and being underwater itself, especially in the ocean, just being there is more than inspiring.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think it is. It's like a feedback loop, I think, being under there. You know, the more you're down there, the more you want to be down there, and the more you see, and the more you can, you want to create down there, you know.
Yes, yes. And I really try with any of my underwater work to kind of, you know, go into that world and not bring my own world with it. That probably doesn't make much sense, but you know, when you're traveling to another country, trying to learn their language and their traditions. And so being underwater, trying to be, sounds cliche, but like one with the water rather than a separate being.
Yeah.
Which really informs your movement, I think.
Absolutely. And that is something that I teach my clients, my subjects, my models, you know, is that when you go underwater, you do end up down there with whatever you take down there with you, because you're there by yourself, you know. You're very insular. We're not communicating with each other. Mm-hmm. It's what's in your brain really informs your reaction to what you do down there in terms of your performance. So letting go of a lot of that stuff and letting the water kind of take control really, it really makes a difference from what I've seen.
Absolutely. I mean, I really find when I'm underwater, especially for longer periods of time, that your brain kind of just goes. It takes a lot of concentration to focus on what you're doing. So especially if you're in front of camera trying to, you know, and if there's choreography, trying to be in the right position in relation to the camera and do this choreography, and then most importantly, convey the story that you're trying to tell. It's challenging because I seem to lose half my brain when I go underwater. Which helps you become more in tune with the water and really drop into your body. But it can be more challenging when you're trying to do a shoot.
Yeah, when you have to hit your mark and when you have to do the technical side of stuff, because I feel like when you go under there, there's the emotional, intuitive side of it, and then there's the technical, you know, work side of it.
Right.
And even for me, when I go under, you know, a lot of time I have to go, remember, you've got a job to do. You can't just sit here and relax and enjoy this. You
know? Yeah, when you're on your own, it like I mentioned earlier, it feels very much like a meditation. And then when you're underwater for a shoot, it's very much a creative, engaged, you know, it's a very different process.
Yeah, absolutely. Claire, this has been amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brett. It's been lovely talking with you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And as always, if you like the podcast, please subscribe, review, and share. If you'd like to support the production of these episodes, you can purchase our very cool merchandise at theunderwaterpodcast.com. We've got branded coffee mugs, stickers, beer cozies, and posters featuring our amazing illustration and logo by Joe Hodenow. If you'd like to connect with us or learn more about our guests, you can reach us at theunderwaterpodcast.com or on Instagram. We also have a Facebook group where you can discuss the episodes and even get your questions answered by the guests. There's a link to it in the show notes. You can learn more about my underwater photography workshops and mentoring at brettstanley.com or Brett S. Photo on Instagram. The Underwater Podcast is presented and produced by me, Brett Stanley, and our music is Neo by Oh Boy. Keep creating, everyone. I'll see you in the water.